From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, the rebuttal of Fatima. Here's what's happening. Fears over a serial killer have some residents in the Tampa area escorting their children to school and the city bus changing its usual routes. Three people have been shot to death in the past couple weeks within a one-mile radius in the normally quiet Seminole Heights neighborhood. Police believe the shootings are linked by proximity and time frame, but they don't have a motive or a suspect. The three victims apparently did not know each other, but all three rode the bus and were alone when they were shot in the street. None was robbed. Strange story there. The FBI has released more than 1,500 pages of heavily redacted documents related to the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, the file shedding light on the relationship between the gunman, Adam Lanza, and his mother prior to the deadly massacre. The documents posted on the federal agency's archive page on the rampage in Newtown, Connecticut, that left 20 first graders and six educators dead, included redacted grand jury subpoenas and reports by agents who interviewed people about Lanza. In one interview, an unidentified person told the FBI that Lanza's mother, Nancy, was concerned about him a month before the shooting because he had become a shut-in who hadn't gone anywhere in 3 months. Adam Lanza shot his mother to death while she slept on December 14th before going to the school to continue that rampage. North Korea's threat of nuclear war is now at an unprecedented level, according to a Japanese official. Tensions are getting really, really high. Dr. John Curtis, who's just checking the world for us. John, first, North Korea. What's going on?
Well, North Korea has not made an act yet. I mean, so I think the message has been delivered to them that if they shoot off, they detonate another nuke or they fire off another ballistic missile, the B-1B bombers could be flying over and dropping bombs on Pyongyang. But I think that the circumstances now are no different than they were before, because as Jimmy Carter said, he, as a 92 or 93-year-old, he wants to go to North Korea to mediate the end of the crisis. Now, nobody can really take that seriously because kicking the can down the road is not going to help the U.S. I know a lot of folks here, you know, you're doing the show from the West Coast, and mm-hmm. I know that there's a lot of folks here that are getting kind of nervous about the prospects of a nuclear-tipped ICBM by North Korea. So I think when you look at the situation right now, it's in a holding pattern, but as the Japanese said, the South Koreans, when the foreign minister of North Korea says they want to sink Japan, they want to wipe out North Korea, and they want to turn the U.S. to ashes and darkness with a nuke when they have the capability of it, it's a threat that, you know, can't be charmed out of existence. So I think that's where North Korea stands.
And other issues that are going on around the planet, John, we haven't talked too much about the investigation into the Russian tampering and everything else, but what I want to ask you is this. A couple of Republicans just going after President Trump today. Are you sensing that this country is topsy-turvy right now? I mean, I've never felt or seen anything like this in a long time.
Well, I think what you're witnessing is that Trump was not a Republican, even though he ran on the Republican ticket. And while Mitch McConnell is making overtures to Trump right now, especially with respect to tax reform, you see some members like Jeff Flake from Arizona, Senator Flake, and Corker just going off the rails in terms of attacking Trump for really no reason other than the fact that they've kind of got sucked into this media frenzy that exists out there. That takes anything that Trump does and turns it into a complete catastrophe. Forget about the record highs on the stock market, the record low unemployment. Forget about the fact that North Korea, for the moment, is standing down, that's threatening a nuclear attack on the United States. Forget about the fact that ISIS has been evicted from Raqqa and Mosul under Trump's watch. In other words, a number of pretty positive things have happened, yet you would never see it in the media for some reason. In fact, what all you see is the Gold Star family, Johnson, this is David Johnson, who was killed in that incident on the 4th in Niger, along with three other of his colleagues, the special forces. They're comparing this to the Benghazi attack. Now, I don't know about you, but I know that if you're in sub-Saharan Africa, and the United States is conducting counter-terrorist operations in that region, or the Middle East, or in North Africa, I know that it's a dangerous operation and anything can happen. And yet, if you look at the way the media has covered this, their only interest is in Trump somehow botching this condolence phone call with Maisha, his widow, and putting that on 24/7.
All right, see, that's what I don't get. He may have botched it, John, but 24/7 constantly, it's just too much. It's too much. John, thanks. We've got to move on. A growing percentage of renters believe it is cheaper to rent than to buy a home, which helps explain why the home ownership rate remains persistently low there. A massive botnet has been gathering steam over the past few weeks, threatening to ravage the web. Security researchers say this is serious. A botnet uses collections of devices like Wi-Fi routers or smart webcams, which have been hacked to send the surges of data to servers, causing them to crash, disrupt services, and ultimately go offline. Wine production forecast to fall lowest level in over 40 years because of lousy weather in Europe. Public health officials are saying that you should go home and rest rather than just be given antibiotics, that it's better to try to let your own body heal itself, you know, something we've talked about on this program for a long time. Up next, the work of John Hoag on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And for the next couple hours, the expert on prophecies with us, John Hoag. John writes, of course, on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, prophecy. He is a world authority on Nostradamus, best-selling author. Some of his books include Predictions 2015-16, Trump Strikes Syria and Korea. We're going to talk about that. And beyond alt-right, alt-left, a community of Americans. Welcome back, John. Always a pleasure.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, George.
And I cannot think of a better time to have you on just to get your advice on what's happening. Unbelievable.
Well, it is a thing that we've been talking off and on for a couple decades about. And it was more theoretical back then because it was over the horizon. But we've talked about this before, that things I've talked about native predictions and aboriginal and tribal predictions all around the world, I started noticing in the late 80s and collecting statements and utterances of shamans and other people that had one thing in common. They felt that there'd come a time when if there were too many people on the planet living their lives unconsciously, living their lives not centered, living their lives in an ego state, not loving, not aware, that it, just as some people believe the atmosphere is being polluted by human beings, there's also a psychic atmosphere around the planet Earth that shamans and Native Americans and others believe is also being polluted by our unconscious psychic pollution. And I gave it a name in books like Messiahs and the Millennium Book of Prophecy back in 94 and 99. I gave it what I called the mind plague. And it's basically a situation where the new abnormal becomes the normal, where you see people relate, polarize.
Angry, very
act
angry.
Act irrational. I mean, who would have thought that with all the hair trigger dangers that we've had with North Korea, that we'd have two leaders of either side, daring and double daring, like 8-year-olds. That's a sign of what happens, what the shamans were foreseeing, that we kind of lose our way. And in a way, it can be countered only one individual at a time. Each person has a remedy to this mind plague, and that is to not be in their mind as their center, but in their soul. And certain techniques of meditation, self-observation, certainly help me. I can attest to it for my own life in dealing with this, because not only am I just living on this planet like everybody else, I've got my head straight in the center of all this chaos. And that requires a certain distance, certain centering, an understanding of what it is, rather than being ruled by it. And everything that we'll be talking about tonight, I'm just kind of laying out the foundation of a number of things we're going to be talking about are related to this mind plague.
Are you sensing an uneasiness in this country?
Well, yes, uneasiness actually all over the world, an uneasiness even in the world itself. We're entering a planetary disaster. We've not seen something like this in human memory. We're entering unknown. What I also feel with that is something else. Every evolutionary crisis, every evolutionary jump brings fear of the unknown.
Right.
Whether it's semi-conscious or whether it's atavistic, whether it's just in ourselves. And as mystics will tell you, everything is interrelated. Even the mountains have some sense of something going on. The oceans and the people, the animals. And if one's sensitive, one can actually see it. One can feel it. And so, yes, it is scary. It's like the bottom of the floor is being dropped out from under us. But these are often the opportunities for the courageous, for the people who, these are the times when people get their apple cart upset, and these are the times when they start looking at themselves. I mean, one could say that if you're on the path of self-awareness and meditation, you might say the bad ages are the ones where everything is going so comfortable that we all go Ossie and Harriet Nelson deep asleep, like happy zombies. And in a way, that's what brought us to this situation. This is not something that just transpired. It's something that we've been sowing for decades.
It's been festering, hasn't it?
And so a person who's looking at trying to find what is truth beyond what the societies and the religions and everything say, but to directly experience what the truth is going to take these difficult, uncomfortable times as an opportunity to wake up. So I, as much as it's scary, it's also full of potential for waking up. Childhood's end of humanity, I've often told you, is coming to an end in this new century, and especially in the 2020s. The 2020s are going to be the most challenging decade in human memory. And in a way that can be embraced as something good. At last, we're either, it's a risk, we may not make it, but we may break through. Rather than have a nervous breakdown, we might have a nervous breakthrough as a human race.
Johnny, a couple months ago, you stopped just about everything you were doing to write a book called Trump Strikes Syria and North Korea with a question mark on North Korea. How come you rushed this out? You obviously felt something very important.
Well, you know, George, I don't know what it is about April. Maybe it's because in the old days, April is ruled in astrology by Aries, and Mars is the rule of Aries, and that used to, probably why they named it that is because that's usually in ancient times when wars begin, because the weather gets better. The winter is ended, and that's usually when armies in ancient times are on the move. And actually, until recently, it, it's it's now everybody fights at all times of the seasons, but that's actually a recent development. So in that habit, in that unconscious habit, it seems like things erupt in March, April, and back 2 years before, in April of 2014, you know, I got on your show because I had to write a book a couple weeks about that the new Cold War had started, and the one that Nostradamus gave a countdown to. That countdown is now coming to the first of two counts, the short count. We're kind of in it now. You know, given the fact that when exactly this new Cold War with Russia and America began, I mean, I won't go into a lot of details about it, but simply because certain, would you have to kind of say, okay, where do you start counting? Do you start counting during the Ukrainian Revolution? Do you start counting when Putin took Crimea away? Do you start counting when the sanctions and counter-sanctions happen at the end of April? I would say that you could actually embrace some of all of that, because in prophecy, it's very rare that things are right on a time clock. They kind of flow in and flow out like seasons, a lot of things in the future. So you could say that since September, and heightened by November, which would be the last of the big things that happened 3 years and 7 months ago that caused this, that we're now in one of those real dire windows. And certainly it is also possible that the situation where the U.S. Congress basically took the president's power to end sanctions with Russia or heighten them, whatever, without going through Congress, this is quite unconstitutional. Even Trump, in his protest to the bill, because he had no way to do a veto, I think he just said, "This." You could say that the Cold War truly began. I know in Moscow they believe it truly began when that happened at the end of summer. So with that in mind, then we're the short count may be a little longer delayed into the final years of this presidential cycle, into the first year, 2020 to 2021. Which also is a window to watch.
You have predicted things like ISIS would collapse, and it seems to be right now.
ISIS, I said, would, in several books, would have its kind of last stand in the summer of 2017. And by the time that a defining planet's transit that seems to always happen every 30 years in the last few cycles of Saturn, the last time it was in the late 80s. Long story short, it seems that Islamic extremism or religious extremism tends to become mainstream as one potential of Saturn's transit through the sign of Sagittarius, which happens about every 29 to 30 years. By around the solstice of December, Saturn is going to finish its transit, the second transit in 30 years of Sagittarius. The last transit saw the rise of Al-Qaeda, the birth of it. This transit saw the rise of ISIS, the Islamic State, even worse than Al-Qaeda, and a resurgence of Al-Qaeda, with both of them claiming territory for their own versions of the Islamic caliphate. Now, Idlib is where the ISIS people are holed up. They have had not their last stand yet, but it's the Russians and the Syrians are pushing them hard, and the Turks are in the north of that. You have a collapse of ISIS in eastern Syria, that is, and the destruction of Mosul, which unfortunately the numbers that I said would happen in this battle of Stalingrad of the Arab world, great city battle, which I anticipated could be between 50 to 100,000 civilians killed. Jeez. Now they're admitting 40,000, but they haven't even begun to look.
John, we're going to hit this break pretty soon, but I want to come back and talk a little bit more about some things that are going on worldwide. Plus, we'll also talk about one of your new books, Beyond Alt-Right and Alt-Left, and also how you tie in eclipses, earthquakes, and tsunamis in a situation. So we're going to come back in a moment with John Hogue. Don't forget, folks, to just like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We sent one out today, and we just want to stay in touch with you. So we'll be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest, John Hogue. John, of course, will be talking about all kinds of things that affect all of us in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, John Hogue with us. His website, hogueprophecy.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We make it really easy for you to get to all our guests' websites. You also did a book on the astrological signs of the president. Let's talk about how that turns into events that are happening today, John.
Well, I wrote a book called President Trump, Trump for President, Astrological Predictions.
That's the book we tried to get to him, right?
Yeah, that's the one that where over a year before the election, it basically declared he had the astrological capability of creating an upset victory against Hillary Clinton, added to her predilection, as I've said in articles for years, of being really good at sabotaging her own destiny.
Yeah.
Which she did. And in that book, certainly the last third of it dealt with what's going on in Trump's presidency. And certainly a lot of the chaos, the consequences of his afflicted Mercury, which makes him kind of a wide-open unconscious channel, means he channels whatever's before him. In a way, it's his spontaneity, his almost deep down innocence that is his greatest asset, but it also potentially makes him Pinocchio going with the fox and the other creatures in the Disney film into some kind of mess. You know, it's like he's like the heroic little child who goes into the Washington swamp to play with the crocodiles. And a lot of what I see that he's doing is caused by these issues with his Mercury, his up again, down again relationship with his networking planet of Neptune, and ultimately he has the issue, almost a curse. Both the American people and him have this issue to deal with of living in a very delusional relationship. It's based on the fact that his natal sun and Uranus, which is right on his sun, which makes him so spontaneously unpredictable. And I said he'd be pulling 180s. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he got tired and fed up with the Republicans and started just doing business with the Democrats.
He might and could. Yeah.
Especially if the Democrats take back the Senate. This.
He might not have a choice.
Yeah. Well, this is tied in to two things. You have it's like a relationship between a man and a woman, the man being the president, the woman being the people of the United States. And it's a classic tragic relationship where both couples, both members of this relationship, have expectations and dreams that they think the other is an empty screen filling. They want to broadcast their movie on the other person. But if you live with somebody for a while, you realize that he is not the man you married, and American people, you're not the people that he said he wanted to make great again.
You say that there is a potential of the 25th Amendment being invoked.
This is the fourth clause of the 25th Amendment. In short, it would be a situation where he's considered unable to continue his work in office, either for mental reasons, health reasons, and it would be sort of a rebellion of his cabinet.
Yeah, it starts by the vice president, and then it goes to the cabinet, and they vote, and they can literally get him out.
Yeah, but it's as much as people have been waiting for like a death watch for this to happen, and a lot of people, especially the people who don't want him in office, every daily in my own little village on the island where I live, people are saying, when's he going to go? When's he going to go? And And I say, you know, I don't see it coming any time sooner than May of any real consequence of a threat to this. And if he survives his first term, it's a big if, he could go for two terms. So I can almost hear half your audience screaming now. But
well, and just so we both know, when you talk about survive, you're talking primarily about politically.
Yeah, I don't see...
I don't even go there.
Physical harm to him. What I see is a man who's really not a politician.
That's what people liked. Initially, that's what people wanted. They wanted something refreshing. I think his vote was an anti-Hillary vote, primarily.
Well, it was an anti-establishment vote, and here's the classic thing, George. Because he's such a wide-open channel, he had these very effective meetings with thousands of people where he channeled their feeling, and he was responding to that feeling. But, you know, take him to Washington and surround him with a lot of neocon generals and alt-right and this and that people, and suddenly Donald Trump, the open, wide channel, is suddenly sounding like them. And doing everything opposite to
right.
what he said to the other crowd.
And this changing of his staff so quickly is also a little bizarre.
Well, it's an odd thing, George. Things happen in this world of forecasting where you get guided to do and study things, and you personally say, why in the world am I writing and studying this guy, Donald Trump, since 1992. But I've been in this business enough to know that it will be revealed. So I have been watching him like a hawk since 1992 when he rose out of his troubles with the real estate market in Manhattan Island and then redoubled his Trump Organization to becoming an international business. And I then felt he was a man of destiny. Now, when I say that, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm simply saying a man that will be a catalyst for great changes. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I mean, one of the reasons why I have an accurate track record is that I leave all of my personal hopes and fears and political expectations out of it and just see it as if I'm a visitor to this world, having no stake in the emotional charges and attachments. And so I contend, and anybody who reads my books on Trump, that I probably are laying out things about Donald Trump that are most fair in my forecasting field and aren't kind of hair on fire with red fire for Republicans and blue fire in their head for Democrats, but simply just looking at this man. And what I see is that he is an eight-year-old child. And the best way to deal with an eight-year-old child is to love them and to be positive in your contact. He needs to surround himself with more people that, because he does not have his own centering. To his biggest detriment is that he does not have an ability to center in himself. He's just kind of adapts as an unconscious channel would to whomever's in front of him. So this problem is that he's just channeling who's ever there, and that brings us to this amazing thing that happened during the eclipse, where he had major conjunctions, Saturn and other things on this eclipse that showed it would be a milestone change in his presidency. And it's also brought us into this, strangely enough, in a way, the way he behaves with Kim Jong-un is really the first time the Korean leader has had somebody talk the same talk.
Yeah.
And and I have a sense that they actually respect that, despite the silly things that North Koreans have been saying.
He's probably trying to figure them out, and he can't.
Well, some people would think that this is on the edge and North Korea is going to launch a missile and all that. And really, this is part of the hysteria of our times and the dereliction of duty of our journalists in the media these days. North Korea isn't anywhere close to building an actionable nuclear weapon that could hit the United States for at least 2 to 3 years.
But would you let them get one? Would you let them build it?
Well, you know, let's pretend we are in Pyongyang. Let's try to think like the so-called enemy. Why would you build? If we didn't have nuclear weapons and we're at the General Assembly of the United Nations this last September, and if we were another country, and if the President of the United States got up before the entire United Nations Assembly and basically said, we may have to completely destroy the entire of North Korea. I mean, it's 25 million people. Even Adolf Hitler didn't make statements like that in public before in major political speeches broadcast on radio all over the world. It's just because he doesn't understand the gravitas of where he's at. Basically, what the president did was reinforce Pyongyang and the Kim regime's reasons for having nuclear deterrence.
Well, they're paranoid. North Korea is paranoid.
Mad Americans from saying one thing and doing another. I mean, look at the fellow dictators that gave up their weapons to the West. Look what happened to Gaddafi. Look what happened to Saddam Hussein. I'm not defending these people. I'm just giving your listeners an experience of what's called realpolitik. That is the politics that gets over all the emotional stuff and just looks rationally at the situation, why people do what they do. And then when you understand that, then you can understand that actually what China and Russia are proposing is the way out of this danger. That is the double freeze. That is because basically North Korea says, if you keep doing your even as we speak, they're doing decapitation rehearsals in South Korea. Now, if you did that, if the Canadians did that with a test to see what they were going to do to Washington, guess how upset we would be. Guess how close to war we would be with Canada. It, you know, do unto others you'd have them do unto you. I mean, if you, the Koreans are human beings like us. They're afraid. They feel isolated. Whether they certainly have their part in that, but it's not solely their part. One of the greatest mistakes of human misunderstanding is how we separate ourselves from the people we identify as our enemies. We dehumanize them. You have to dehumanize somebody before you can rationalize your irrational idea of wiping them out. And so, you know, these are people, and, you know, we don't remember that 1/3 of the North Korean population was bombed to the Stone Age by us during the Korean War in the 1950s. That there was not even one building standing.
They started that war.
Yeah, and it's still on. It's not over.
No.
So there's a lot of stuff here, a lot of injury and harm and the North Koreans, by just kind of pushing on them again, we're actually causing more trouble in this situation. If we simply, here's all that needs to happen. Even in my book, I ended it with a list of things that needs to happen. I also, in the book, as Trump Strikes Syria and North Korea, try to give you what you're not getting from your news, the Korean side of this, both South and North. Because even the South Koreans are not being heard, and you Americans are not being taught what they think about all this. They're just as scared of Trump as the North Koreans are. It's because they're the people who are going to be dying in their millions. And people also in our country don't understand why there's such tension and wounds between the Japanese and the Koreans. The Japanese in the imperial period treated the Koreans terribly. We also don't know that that we basically created the first division of the Koreas. Korea's never been divided. The Americans started the whole game of dividing it by creating South Korea as a kind of puppet nation. I mean, I've said before on your show, the South Korean generals do not command, nor do their leaders command, what would go on in a war. The U.S. president has power over them. They are not a completely sovereign state.
Right.
And so, you know, but we just never get told that. And that means that we're running into situations half-cocked and half understanding what's happening. So anyway, the thing is very simple. If you want to keep the tensions down, you say, all right, we'll stop our decapitation exercises. We'll stand down. You stop your missile tests and stop your nuclear development. Because the whole point is you feel threatened by us any day now, going in any time we want and wiping out Pyongyang, taking out your leadership, and taking over. Okay, we're going to stop that. Now, the price is you got to stop scaring us by building these nuclear deterrents that
right.
you would threaten us in the Western states with. Simple.
When did they come to this agreement, this understanding?
Well, this is the thing, you know.
You should be over there
in the U.S. watching the news. If you have to kind of watch news outside of this country to find out what's really going on, what really people think on either side, because I'm not sure the U.S. press even tells you much here that there's already been option in August and September put on the table. And when people keep saying in the news the Chinese aren't doing anything, the Chinese have been doing a lot of efforts to decompress this thing and relax it. The Russians also have been, because they're on the border with North Korea. If there's a war, Vladivostok is going to be, millions of Russians are going to be impacted. So they've come up with this double freeze situation. And the only thing that Nikki Haley could say in the UN ambassador of the United States was that it was ridiculous. And she didn't want to even address the possibility that you could, let's have a timeout. You Americans and North South Koreans, stop making these.
Take deep breaths. But you know what concerns me, John?
But, you know, and then you work out the stuff that was supposed to be worked out over 60 years ago and promised at the end of the armistice in 1953. A lot of things that would then further demilitarize the Korean Peninsula. This all can happen. And the Russians and the Chinese are ready to help. But, you know, it's just like people wanting to belittle Trump at every which way about the Niger deaths. The news just wants to spend on this stuff about what he said or didn't say on the phone with the widow.
Right.
When there are so many other more important things, like people are been playing around with this soap opera called The Russian Hack. And I will say it again, on the record, as a forecaster to the future.
Hold it for that. We're going to take a break. We're going to take this break, John. We'll come back and get your thoughts on that in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John Hogue with us, plus we'll open up the phone lines. I still want to talk with him about his work on the Great American Eclipse, Earthquake, and Tsunami. Much more to talk about when we come back.